说是一个机械的机器人生产最大的关于没有你利用那我就是we are much better in understanding what you are doing and the challenges that you are having and the government generally is having in certain areas. Can I then request the honourable members, you know how we do it. This was quite a long presentation pointed to the question, clarification. I don't want to limit you, but let's be alive to the fact that we would still want the DG to respond to what would be saying. Honourable Zemba, I see your hand is up. Honourable Matafa, Honourable Sheikh, Honourable Peters, Honourable Kaiso. In that order, my plea, let's zoom to the question, please.
Thank you, Chair. The first one, Chair, would be very egocentric and personal. For a reason, you know. What, DJ, what is your general view on the division of revenue amendment bill? The general. The second one is, what is your take as the department on IPP? We have a view that we still have to engage. If some place for the day a long term approach that we have to engage ourselves, you know, on when we are talking energy and business. And the last one, Chair, would be, is it not possible for us as government to target this bucket sanitary sanitation eradication as a particular project with clean hydrogen, such that we know that within this fifth administration we are done? Thank you.
You've set a very good example. Who's next, Matapa?
Thank you very much, Chair. No, I will follow that example. But firstly, let me welcome the presentation. It's very informative. The first one, Chair, I'm missing the expenditure tracking. So I wanted to find out if it's one of your mandates or if that does not fall within your mandate. The second one, on the first part of the presentation, program number 6, governance of public administration. There is the evaluation of the DPSA. 2 out of 2 targets were not achieved. Can we please talk to that? Because I'm also missing customer satisfaction from citizens interacting with government departments. I'm not sure if whether are you also measuring that particular indicator. The last one, Chair, is on the economic outlook. The issue of inequality, which remains very high. The last release by the SSA is that the inequality gap is actually growing, and the most negatively affected are Africans. I'm just concerned, Chair, we have many policy instruments from EEAA, BBBE, BBBFA. I just want to find out, have we looked into the effectiveness of this particular instrument? And maybe as a part of the short, I'll be interested also to see between 2015 and now, the trend in the sector that have led to the inequality growing and negatively affecting Africans. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh.
Thank you, Chair. You've heard about 60 questions, but I'll bring it down to you. Your issue in terms of, I'm concerned about the reliability or accuracy of your steps, because my understanding is that as of last year, well, the throughput rate in Tibet College is only 1 out of 10. So I don't know where the 30% thing is coming from, so I'm a little bit concerned about the accuracy of that. The other thing is, can you tell us what impact do you believe, if you look at the performance of the Department of Health in many aspects where they have not been achieving their targets of the reporting given us, what impact is it going to have to in us attempting to roll out the NHI, you know, because we are heading in that direction. The other thing is that if you look at National Treasury and its performance in certain areas in terms of your report, now, how much do you comment on that if National Treasury themselves don't seem to be, you know, performing to the extent that they are supposed to? How do you get other departments that they have appropriate resources to be able to comply if they themselves don't? And you know, one good example was that integrated financial management system, you know, I mean, hundreds of millions were being given with no invoices and no nothing. So that is the other problem that I have. Now, you know, at the end of the day, what people are interested in delivery of services, particularly on the ground, and you know, and I know that people don't judge you on what you do, they judge you on what you don't, unfortunately. There's a lot of good work being done, but we have challenges. Now, 18 out of the 257 municipalities, if I have it correctly, had poor audit findings. Now, what is your department doing to ensure, and who are you engaging with to try and deal with that issue? And then let me go for the final one for now. Is that you identify challenges in terms of coordination and special planning and strategic planning between the three spheres of government? Now, I don't know whether this question is, but since you're based in the president's office, maybe I should ask. Do you believe then if there's no coordination, they're not working together, we're not achieving those targets, that it is necessary to maintain or retain, that's the word that I have, the three-sphere government? You know, or should we not consider some states going to national and district level, smaller size, better performance, and greater coordination, and with the relevant departments being able to do the oversight, more money will be able to go towards the... I see you haven't touched on the issue of our rising debt. In terms of this, they're talking about going to, we're going to $3 trillion now at the moment. That is it. And what impact is it going to really have based on the performance of all these departments? And what ultimately is the responsibility? Because I see you are planning, so I want to know what do you plan to do? You then monitor. No, I want to know the role you play. Yeah. Then you monitor what is going on, you evaluating it, and once you evaluated this, who are you reporting to? And that's why we believe we need to be getting information, you know, concrete information on specifics so that we can deal with it. We follow the money and the money. So after your evaluation, where do you stop? What do you do? Who do you report to? Or is it just a dead end for me? I'll stop there for now.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to check this matter because I'm very passionate about it. The 275 creation of job opportunities, 275,000 per annum. I'm taking this advantage because we are in the office of the President. He has repeatedly made the statement about this. Over a period of 5 years, 500,000. Now, how do you intend to monitor this process unfold? Secondly, is the issue of gender transformation and gender disability transformation. This one also has been mentioned repeatedly in the statement of the President. How do you because in the presentation, it is something that is not explicitly coming out when it comes to statistics and reporting during the presentation. The issue of gender transformation and disability transformation is one of the areas that you said in the, I think the last second slide, that is, disability transformation has grown only to 1%, which is a serious concern. So how do you intend to monitor that 1% expand to, you know, even to exceed 7%, because I know where I'm seated at. The white paper on disability transformation has actually, from the Public Service Commissioners, has actually committed to reach even up to 7%. But then you are reporting that the monitoring has captured up to only 1% transformation that is happening there, which is a serious concern. So how do you intend to move, sir? Thank you.
Peter?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much, DG, for the presentation. Chairperson, when you listen to the presentation about performance, you would really think that we're doing quite well in terms of how departments indicate that they have been able to meet their targets, some of them even reaching 100%, all those showing a glossy picture. But when you go to impact, you really get worried. Chairperson, my question to the DG will just be around sustainable human development and the improved quality of household life. DG, when you travel around South Africa, especially in our rural areas, sometimes they can actually say, there's a culture thing that I like so much that when I started learning culture, I usizi enqamlezulu. Sometimes you really feel and see the glaring disparities in the way in which those threaten. If you look at housing and sanitation and access to water in rural areas, you then start asking yourself truly whether this is the South Africa we all live in, or is this a different country that people are looking in, are living into. And the challenges of our rural communities, especially if you look at, we once found in a village near King Williamstown called Etolofeye, a 90-something-year-old lady staying with children there in a house that was so dilapidated, it was unbelievable. And you then ask yourself, why are we unable to intervene and build houses in rural areas? And then the issue of amakhosi and land ownership and the right of to occupy and or permit to occupy, all those things comes to the fore. But the other thing that goes to a quality of household life is the issue of sanitation. That old lady obviously cannot dig a particular tree for her son. And what is it that we would then, from a department like performance monitoring and evaluation, be advising a department like human settlement on a rural human settlement policy as well as sanitation provision policy? Because I would believe that those are areas that we need to intervene in. The other thing, Chairperson, the DG speaks about title deed transfer. We have challenges in our communities, especially in the townships, where you have now a situation of multiple owners on one property. The other one owns the land, the other one is the house. Then you ask yourself how that was allowed to happen. You have, I like watching this program on TV called Kupitila, and you start seeing how people literally fight. I like it because of the legal expertise that they provide for our people to understand the issues of property ownership and what prevails. But it tells you that there is something that is just not okay in our community. Because how does it happen? Like, for example, I'm making an example. During the election campaign, I came across a situation where in a community, and Chairperson, I'll always make reference to, because you also visited that area, where old people were staying in sheds whilst they were told that their houses has long been built and somebody else owns that particular house. How does it happen that you should be having that type of situation? So a chairperson, the other thing is there's under a response outcome 9, effective local government, the issue of the connection of household to grid electricity overperformed. And yet we still have communities that don't have electricity as we speak. National Treasury indicated to us that there is integrated national electrification program money that they will have to reallocate because of underspending. And you ask yourself, how can there be underspending in a situation where there are still people who don't have electricity for basic lighting? And yet we pride ourselves as South Africa that our government is a pro-poor or implement pro-poor policies. And I think it is important that we look into those particular situations. Chairperson, the last one is the issue related to environmental assets and natural resources. The River Health Program, and it ties in, Chairperson, to our earlier discussion about the Vaal River remediation. Because you find, look at the number of health programs, only 73% achieved. And there is somewhere where you indicate the crocodile river situation, but also the state. If you just look at the situation in Alexander and Jetstein, every time that there are rains and floods, lives are lost there, especially of children. And it tells you, I don't know, if we look about look at job creation and other areas, there's also opportunity for job creation with environmental asset and natural resources management. If there's one area that we can create many jobs. You'd remember a DG, in your previous life you were a DG of the Department of Transport, and in my life at that time I was in a problem somewhere. You gave money for building of a small branch from Douglas to Belmont. Yes, you still remember. If I can tell you what that has done for that small town right now, to an extent where people were celebrating now the other day for the first time, Douglas is for a KFC. For many people it means nothing, but for people of Douglas it means a lot. To have a spa, to have a Foschini, to have all those. And that comes with jobs that can be a part of that. So I'm just saying some of these things tell you that a small intervention that has a potential to turn the economy of a town can help. But I'm raising this for you to help with job creation with some of the programs, especially in view of the question raised by Honorable Sayid. Thank you.
Honorable Judges? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. I just would like to know from the DG, I'm concerned about the income, not just here dealing with budget and expenditure, about the informal economy. Where do you fit it in with Department of Econ or National Treasury? Because there is a big decline in South, and there's an informal economy which is getting bigger, while the formal economy is struggling. So I just want to know what is your view on that, and how who must actually manage that. And in outcome 13, you raised the issue about old age grants, but life expectancy, which is a good thing, also means budget where government has expected budget, because people are living longer in terms of the social responsibility of government. And then the other point that concerns me is outcome 14, the disability target for people to get work. I think 10 years ago or more, it was really 2%. The target was in 2%. And yet in your reports, you still indicate 1%. So we're failing that in that regard. The other issue about housing is the title deed is a good thing, but I think what we need to do with housing in addition to that is we must have a national database. So when someone put his ID in, we can see whether the person got a house or not. and I think there is a few challenges of government giving houses, and I think there's kind of dishonesty that crept into the system, or nepotism, or whatever you want to call it. We just hear more and more stories on the ground. Then the other thing that you didn't say something about is the ward committees, the functionality of ward committees in communities, which has an impact on stability in municipalities. I see you've made a point in IDP on outcome 8, but I'm interested in, do you also monitor the functionality of ward committees? Thank you, James.
Yeah, remember, it's good to be the teacher in many places, so you can ask any question about government. So as you heard Honorable Peter saying, can I make this statement? I just want to hear what you're going to say about it. That what do you say if I'm saying, as government, we spread ourselves too much, and as a result, least impact. Why to do so many things, and when you look at impact, then it becomes difficult for us to be impactful. National School of Governance. I'm still not sure what is being taught there, but just want to hear you. What do you think of the outcome of the school, and are we relevant to the needs that government need have? And one of the observations that we have made is that in government generally, even in SOCs, including big SOCs like ESCOM, the question of project management is not there. The question of contract management is not there. You see that by the overshooting of the budget that we have all over. When you get into a digital project, that's what you get. And perhaps adding to that, the relevance of the CTAS. Because people are always see people who are training and training this and so on. What's the relevance of that? And add to that, you know that the SOCs were used by the National Party government to train and train and train. For example, if you were to look at Transnet, there's nothing you can't train a person on a Transnet. Like genius, artisans, everything, so on. There's nothing you don't get. The same applies to ESCOM. The same applies to BRASA. You go on and on. Now, there was, for instance, remember, there used to be SLN Park at Transnet. I don't know whether it's still there. But what used to come out there is people who could do something. For instance, when we were busy with the Transnet pipeline, we had to import welders. Welders, they were imported, and then to come and be welders, right? And there are so many people who are not employed in this country. So, DG, my question with all these things, that all these training institutions, there's a school of governance. I'm saying, what's your take on us trying to get most of these monies and take them back to the SOCs with a specific outcome that you need, the skills that you are going to need when you do most of these things? And then with your state, now, what's holding up? And this is, you don't need to go and consult anybody outside. It's us as government. Why don't you sometimes get into a particular room, close the door, go to the 10th floor, you throw the key out of the window, and you say you must only open once you have agreed when this day is going to come up high. In Zulu, there's something where they said, I'm saying Umu, when they started talking about this thing, because I was still a very young man, and now I'm having a bald head, still we have not been able to finalize this dead thing. What's holding it up? Is it not one of those things which you must take and say, we've done them, and then we can proceed? One thing for me which I always ask myself, and I don't come with a convincing answer to myself. It's a very subjective question, but I would like to hear your views. As I was saying to the other members, that with you we can ask any question, it's fine. Do you think we'll ever be able to solve the problem of housing in this country? It's a very pertinent question, but let me leave it at that. the Congress has spoken about the eradication of the budget system. Again, those things, if we were to focus our resources, and we know that we have done this, we've dealt with it. But that goes hand in hand with the question of pit latrines and schools. What will it take for us to make sure that we eradicate that? I heard you saying that we are busy interacting, for example, with Gauteng to deal with the 30 days payment of small businesses. But you know that national governments are also guilty of the same thing. And from one president to the other, we speak about this, from one DG and so on, but it seems not to happen. From one administration to the other, the sixth administration, how can you help us to make sure that at least this one again, were able to take the ball, that at least people are being able to. You know, we're talking about 30 days. There are invoices which are more than six months, which are more than a year, and so on, and you try to find out what exactly is happening. The impact of that, when it comes to job creation, when it comes to even the economic growth that we're talking about, it's huge, and you can get into that. But I'm just saying, what is it that you can do, even from our side? We are parliamentarians. I think the little discussion that we had, one of our responsibilities is to make law. The type of laws that we think we must consider making to try and enhance delivery of our government. You should be able to reflect on that. And some of the questions that we are asking you, for instance, I'm asking you about national department, and that's why the honourable members have been saying to you, why don't you do this and so on. I think you also alluded to me that, by the way, I don't have a legislative enabling a type of a thing to do certain things. Talk to that, but the main thing for me, these are lawmakers, what is that they should consider in trying to ensure that we try to enhance a service delivery. DG?
Thank you very much to the Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members for a very engaging session. Maybe just to make it easier, may I start by asking my colleagues to answer, then I'll close with the rest of the issues that I will handle. CDG, Joseph Fielder, Bafo Shope is responsible for social compact, is one of these outcome facilitators. Today she's with us because she's acting DDG for monitoring. She belongs in that branch. And she'll be able to deal with the issue of gender, disability, equality, and she handles outcome for 13 and 14, which is a social program, but also the social protection. You ask her anything about that, she knows it as it walks and sleeps. That's her area of specialty. And then I'll ask our colleague Deshri. There was a very specific question I think that was asked by a member on a special program on the APP, the quarterly performance. I'd like you to handle that. Then I'll come back, Chair, and I'll deal with the rest, and then I'll close. So some of the questions are high level.
I don't even know where to start. Let me just go through them in a tick. On whether we monitor expenditure, and we do particularly during the performance time, we sit together and monitor. Here I've got an example of how outcome 9 is looking at expenditure, unauthorized, irregular processes, and so on. So we do monitor that. That's why we just said the question was whether we do monitor that or not. And gender disability transformation, we did notice that we are not moving as fast as we should in relation to issues of gender and in relation to issues of disability. So what happened was that in this in the sixth administration, we pushed, fortunately, we didn't have to push much because almost everyone was convinced that it is extremely important that we have, through all the priorities, specific gender and disability indicators that we shall track, a gender and disability intervention that we shall track throughout, rather than have it at the end. Maybe we shall make sure that when we do the priority one, the education, health education, both basic and higher, we've got gender indicators that we've got a disability indicator, right? So going forward, the things will change. The white paper is being monitored annually, and again, it's obvious that things are not moving as fast as we should, and therefore we've all agreed that we integrate it throughout the cervical. So hopefully in the next year and so we'll come to the bottom impact, things we have changed. I'm looking at the things that I can answer. On why inequality is not moving as fast as we should. The thing that drives inequality in South Africa largely is wages and the fact that we do not have an asset base. So those that have assets that have assets pre-94 are continuing to earn income from those assets. But over and above that, because we have inequality of opportunity, our education system means that only those that have are able to go to better schools and they get better jobs and get better skills and so on. So that continues over time. But the fact that we are also not getting jobs in general is also another issue. So the wage income means for some they've got lots of income, particularly those that have skills, because there's a skills premium since we've got skills, and then you measure that against those that cannot get a job at all and will not be able to get a job because they have not been able to skill themselves because of inequality of opportunity over the years and inherited a challenge that came pre-94. We've been trying to change that, but the change is not as fast as we wanted to be. So that is why we say the inequality will continue for some time to be bigger than what we hope it should be. It's true that with the increase in health and people living longer, it means the state old age pension more will have to go in. And I'm looking at the digital we must have universal access. People must, because as a country we have committed ourselves through the constitution that we shall look after the most vulnerable of society. It is there, it's a constitutional right. So yes, they will continue getting the state old age pension if they qualify for a state old age. Same with children, they will continue to get grants if their parents are not able to support them. That is part of what the constitution, the Bill of Rights, states.
Thank you very much, DG, and thank you for the question. With regard to the specific question on the PSAM Program 6 and why they haven't performed, so for Program 6, which is Governance of Public Administration, the PSA had one indicator and target only, and they did not achieve on this target, and the reason for that is that they say that the department has prioritized the establishment of the public administration ethics, integrity, technical assistance unit. So that has taken precedence over other work, and that was the reason they've given us as to why they did not achieve that one indicator for Program 6. With regard to the
how many employees are there?
I'm saying in that department, no, it's a rhetorical question. I'm just saying that everybody is busy working on that program.
Okay. And then with regard to Treasury, and there was a comment on non-achievement of the target for quarter two by Treasury. So what the reasons they cited for the non-achievement is basically especially with regard to capacity constraints. So they say they have capacity constraints for certain of their deliverables. They also speak about the demand for their services, especially with the entity area. And because the demand is so great, some of their work, they don't achieve all the targets. And they've also spoken about delays in processes. So for example, delays in processes with regard to drafting specifications. And this has resulted in them not achieving their targets for quarter two. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody. I may attempt to deal with the questions that have been raised, but have not been covered by this project. If I may just start with the issue of division of revenue, honorable members, and there's a history to this. Fortunately, the introduction of the division of revenue was after TFMA, and we were sitting in the infrastructure department and required a mechanism that will allow government to allocate in a different way to government departments, and particularly the three basic services area. And so it evolved. The challenges I think we face is I just don't think we're perfected in the mechanism. The intention is there, but I don't think we've perfected the conditionalities and the management of the conditionalities and the monitoring and the effectiveness of the conditionalities when we allocate to provinces and particularly to municipalities, and whether in fact that is a mechanism within the instrument is effective. Personally, I'm not convinced we've got a perfect system yet. I think there are issues around managing allocations as well, which is what you would call the performance of the division of revenue allocation. Do people utilize the fund for what they intended for, never mind the conditionalities of restricting them, but do they perform on time? Do they perform according to target? Do they not have money that's left over, etc.? Their whole management system is also something that I think we can improve, particularly elaborating on the duties and responsibilities of the national, provincial, and local government in the context of division of revenue. The evolution of this instrument, particularly to deal with basic services, has led to a better way of managing finance, particularly for this dedicated area. But I really believe we could do more. There are certain improvements that we can introduce for more effective funding of some of these areas, particularly given the responsibilities of national and provincial governments with respect to. So my real concern would be effective monitoring. We don't do that as such, and in a lot of the grant systems, we don't venture into analyzing the efficacy of grant systems and grant programs per se, and it might be something that we would really want to do. If I think about this, I also think specifically in the areas of underperforming MIG and other major infrastructure-based service delivery areas. It might actually be, we haven't done it, it might actually be that we look at the government part of basic service delivery and government part of infrastructure investment and just evaluate whether we're doing as well as we could. The normal formula in investment where you must pump prime, i.e. if you put in X amount, what is the value that you actually get? We don't do that with our grant systems. We pour money in and basically we assess impact in these. Our outcome 9 is where we see whether we're doing well in terms of the delivery of the service. But I really think we could do more with respect to that. There are several other questions. I'd like to group some of them as well. IPPs, I think generally there's been support for diversification of energy production in South Africa. The independent power producers were only one form of that. And we supported them and we pushed for them. But we're just getting feedback now that would suggest maybe we should have interrogated more how they were going to implement it. And there are concerns about that and what. We are not in that area directly, but we made an analysis which concluded that you need IPP in order to diversify energy sources and ensure we're all going off-grid, independent power producers, and we are actually ensuring security of energy supply by diversifying the sources and developing other channels of energy production. The challenge is in this particular program and how this one was done. We must say we pushed for it. Treasury came up with the analysis and said, growth inhibitor, we set on the department and ensured that they remove the growth inhibitor, because ours is to grow the economy and ensure that people are not sitting on interventions that can help us. Something in the operational model that may not be getting us the most cost-effective, the cheapest, and the best sustainable results from IPP currently. We haven't looked at it in detail, I must acknowledge, but it's something we'll look at as we go along. What we tend to do with big programs like this is we let them roll, when we see problems, we do what we call a design evaluation. Because in certain instances, we're able to do that. Not the program that's wrong. It's how they've designed it, and we help them to go and redo design evaluation and redesign their processes if, in fact, they're having unintended consequences coming from it. Market system, moving targets, there it is. We've discussed it in great detail, even in cabinet. Market system, informal actors, good. We can tell you we can eradicate it. But the moving target, when we are honest, because once you say market system to South Africans, you can't say, no, I meant that one in township. Market system is an informal settlement. And if we say we'll eradicate market system, we mean we'll eradicate informal settlement. The reality, we all know, that's the moving target.
Sorry, Tichy. Say ya. I'll start getting civilians into this committee because you're bringing soldiers, they start talking about moving targets.
Chairperson, I only learn from the best. I learn from the best. Come on. Expenditure check, I think the answer has been taken care of. Customer satisfaction, you wanted to deal with that? There's an indicator, we have something called Program 4, that we would like to really engage with it. That's the outreach part of the department. The Deputy Minister has been delegated authority to deal with that. In there, we have citizen-based monitoring, we have community-based monitoring, we have frontline monitoring, we have the presidential hotline, which we're now turning into an app. We have unannounced visits, even these of the president and the minister and other ministers, and all sorts of major mechanisms of how we engage communities. We're able to go into Eastern Cape, find a police station that doesn't have bulk water supply and therefore is a white elephant, and get the water people to supply water so the police station operates. We're able to do that for clinics. So we intervene. We've got a team of people who are out there and work like this sector and literally go to these problem areas and find solutions. But they also have dialogues in communities. Community hall full of people, whatever complaints, we fix it. We go and fetch the people who must fix it, make sure they fix it. So that role is a program for. And it would be nice to have the deputy minister and the people responsible for that coming to talk to you about that. But we also use presidential hotline, very important. When our people call the presidential hotline, Jefferson, honestly, they think they're talking to the president. And that's their last request, to say, I've failed elsewhere, and now I'm calling you. Therefore, the seriousness with which we treat it must reflect that that's that person's last hope. So our ability to get departments to respond on time to the presidential hotline inquiry, but also to just make it more sophisticated, and the app is under construction. We've got very clever people in the department that are developing it ourselves. We don't outsource this thing. They are now doing the app for us, and it's going to work. But the problem is that apps require 200% responsiveness, and government is probably a 70% responsiveness.
Can I have a point of clarity? Can you tell us what is your response time when people phone that hotline, regulation hotline, in terms of concerns they may have?
Okay. Chair, it depends on the complexity of the question, and maybe let's can we come and make a presentation on our time? We've done it to many committees. We'll give you the data. It's quite complex. Then it tells you what type of issues we get a response within 24 hours, what type of issues we get a response within a week. We'll give you all the data. Get auditors, the auditor general, auditors, and the issue reports on that. We'll give you total performance of Presidential Hotline and how it's been doing. We've just completed and gotten a clean bill of health from the auditor general. Just this last year, we subjected it to an audit firm. But we'll come back to you. The real difficulties normally are the big infrastructure things. So somebody phones and says, in my area there's no school. We need a school because my community does not have access to a school. Whilst the department, provincial department, can confirm they have a plan for it, we're able to maybe respond within a week with that confirmation, but obviously the need is only going to be met when the service is delivered, and that's very seldom within the same short space. So we're able to give responses. There are certain other areas where the responses are difficult to get from departments, but we've almost blacklisted those departments that don't respond well, and then we deal with them, and this also forms a reflection of their performance. In cabinet, when we go and report on this, and we say this department is hopeless on responding on these matters, and the ministers take responsibility and they respond right. But we'll come back into the Presidential Hotline data. It's a common feature in Parliament as a reporting tool and a system that we normally do. I have to do.
Honourable Chair, can we pass that one and ask it to the department to come back on it?
Chair, there was also a question about. We do. We're not very popular in government. That's why we like associating with you. Because we are the ones that crack the whip. And we are not in a popularity contest. We like being disliked because our intention is to ensure that we deliver. So we work very well with departments, but in essence, we have lines as well. The issue about, I think, the transformation inequality has been addressed. The TVET throughput check, and I just confirm that we'll come back on TVET for a special item. And maybe the committee secretary can just help and keep those track of those items. If you were to schedule one or two items for the next weeks to come, we would be happy to send the relevant person planning of us to make sure we can come. So we'll deal with that as well. On health, the impact on health, look, what we're finding in health is that health services, i.e. the medical system, is improving the quality of health of our people. It shows in life expectancy, mortality rates, etc. What's a problem and seems to be challenging in health is health facilities. And this is what we see in hospitals that are not able to service people, etc. So what we understand is, and we are responsible for part of that program as well, we also responsible for something called Operation Pakisa. Now, in Operation Pakisa is a sub-program called Ideal Clinics. And part of what we do around Ideal Clinics is to prepare those facilities to be almost NIH-ready. And the progress that has been made on those clinics that have been upgraded to that level is something we can also come and talk to you about and just give you the status of where those improvements are. The challenge seems to be in health, two things. Medico-legal claims, as we indicated, in the big hospitals, where, honourable members, I must just tell you, this is just corruption. This thing called medico-legal is clear corruption. We have facilitated the arrest and charging of the state law advisor in Johannesburg, who was censored to this. And I say that because it's public information. Very central, colluding with the lawyers. Now, where do these lawyers come from? The lawyers come from running away from RAF. When we shut down and put the limit on RAF to 150,000, the lawyers had to find somebody else to take advantage of. So they've moved with the reps bill that we would like you to support and facilitate urgently. When they are moving, they're moving to another vulnerable area. They've moved to the issue of health and the founded bundle. What we're doing in health is we're shutting down those opportunities, one by closing the collusion. There's another very important piece of legislation that is here. Please, if members ask us what the priority, that is a big priority. It's called the State Liabilities amendment bill. It got stuck last in the fifth parliament, it's still here. It's not done yet. For us, that's critical. It impacts directly on this day payment and the health system. The question is how. What we said in the state liability bill is when the state is liable for whatever has occurred to you in a health facility. One, the state doesn't have to give you a 3-4 million payout so that you get rich and buy a BMW. Two, when the state finds that you're guilty of whatever happened whilst your child was being born in the hospital, we will pay you through health services. You will get the free health services in return. Three, even if they were found to be a financial liability that you are responsible for paying, the state can decide to pay you in accordance with affordability and pay you monthly over time. That will resolve this problem. And that state liability helps us at least to manage the contingent liability that comes with health services. This is what's going to happen when we pass it, because it's health and other areas. The lawyers, these are super lawyers. Fortunately, we even know their names, because we've been, I have been around check. We've been tracking them from transport. We know their names. They will shift now in the status, the cases are building up, to police. So when people get arrested, what happens to them and how the police mismanage them? They are now shifting their focus to that area. So what are you going to see? Complete over expenditure in the police services because the lawyers have arrived and they are attacking that area. So it's also a very big problem in our society. Hopefully, this state that changes that for us. So hopefully we'll be able to do that for that. Chair, the other issue is ISMS. There's a general statement, and I want to deal with it more than that. There's a general statement that says, when center of government department fails the state, the transgression is even more. So DPSA, maybe even ourselves, we can be accused, the center of government, treasury and others, can't just simply treat their priority areas like others. So the failure in ISMS, which is quite important for us to know, has resulted, we believe, in contributing towards the COE, which is the expenditure on employees, compensation of employees. How? Our CFOs confirmed that if you're at ISMS, literally, you can reduce the number of officials in departmental finance section by 20%. Supply chain sits with human beings that sit like this and do things that ISMS would have just done as part of the party. So it's important for all of us to keep putting pressure in those areas because we can have efficiency and reduce COE in particular areas, particularly these transversal systems work. And the transversal systems are what hold up government. And it's very important for us to get them.
Did you? Yeah. No. You don't need to. You know that there are two ISMSs.
Yes.
ISMS 1 and ISMS 2.
Yes.
ISMS 1, you spend billions and you don't have even a pen to show. I think that's some of the things that are being referred to about what it can do when it's there. I don't think there is an argument about that. I think the question is around if that can happen with a particular department, their department, how can you hold other departments accountable?
Well, Chair, the question I was raising is that we have been asked to zoom into center of government and monitor them. In fact, the accusation has been that we're scared of them because they are like us. So we've been monitoring others and not the center of government. We now, in the sixth administration, have a firm commitment for zooming in on all center of government departments, including ourselves. One of the issues we're actually going to do an evaluation on is structure of government. Clusters and all of these things, do they work, are they effective? The other is in treasury, the whole issues related to MTBTF, MTEF, and I must say, Chair, MTEF was starting to say this. All of us are working on 5-year cycles. MTEF is an idea we all came up with, if you remember, Minister, somewhere around 1999, to deal with infrastructure departments, and we moved from annual budgets to MTEF. But we're running on 5 years. So we're saying to Treasury, please, can we talk to you? Give us a 5-year midterm budget framework rather than the 3 years, because now you are misaligned with all of us. Everything we have is running on fire, but they are not. So it's a conversation we're having, Chair, and it will lead us to deal with those matters so that, but the other one is really concerned about the financial performance of all departments, the irregular, fruitless, wasteful expenditure. As I said, on MTSS, we made that principal priority, targeting more fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We just want to eradicate it completely. Irregular is a little bit tricky, because there are certain things about its classification. Treasury has come up with an instrument around taking the lower ones and saying it's irregular if it's against Treasury regulation, if it's against your own departmental policy, if you have a smaller amount, you need to sort it out and regularize it yourself. But you still need to deal with condonation, efficiency of condonation and all of those processes. And hopefully that will get us there. The question about local government, how do we deal with local government? We have an instrument. Let me say, incubated in CCME. We're doing quite a lot of this incubation. We originate the system, we build it up, and then when it's right, we take it to the environment where it's supposed to operate. It's called LGMIM, Local Government Management Information System. Now, LGMIM is an instrument we've designed ourselves, etc., and we operate. There are possibly, out of the total municipalities, about half of them that have submitted themselves to LGMIM, and in LGMIM we measure the performance of municipalities. But it's voluntary, this is the shortcoming. Municipalities need to say, I want to come onto LGMIM. We can't force it on them. But because we incubated it, our intention is actually to take it and give it to the Department of Culture, because it really doesn't belong to us. It's not an instrument we should be using. We've incubated it at DPME to tell us maybe too much detail about the performance of the municipality, not strategic information, which is what we should be monitoring. So when we had LGMIM, Honorable Chairperson, it stopped us from monitoring COOPTA and provincial COOPTA, because we're doing the local government monitoring for them at the bottom, which is really what we're trying to fix, so that they do their work and use the instrument we're giving them, but we monitor whether they are being effective as national and provincial departments. So that one will change. But we have even several committees here in Parliament have asked us to bring that presentation on LGMIM. We do that quite regularly. A proper system, it shows the performance of each municipality, all areas of performance, etc., etc. We can come and share that with you. Integrated planning, coordination, etc. One of the issues around the legislation as well, Chairperson, we have an integrated planning framework bill from the National Department of DPME. We would like that supported. It was stalled by the closure of Parliament stopping receiving legislation in 2018. You remember that on the June cutoff, we had just gone to Cabinet on the 4th of June to ask for the thing to be published, or the closure date for consultation was the 4th of June, and then Parliament closed the date on the 30th. That's something that's going to come back. It helps us to manage the full cycle of integrated planning from the MDP right down to the ICT. And we do not in that espouse undermining anybody's responsibility. We set up a coordination planning and integration mechanism for the whole country. And that's a very important bill for us to be supported around. And I would also say the most important development recently is the issue of the district model led by the president. But again, the reason it's important without probably realizing it is that probably about 10 years ago we had DPLG then, not COOPTA, do a study that also related to what is the tier of government that we need, which is the most important, because the real difficulty is having local district. That's where sometimes the conflict comes, particularly the presence of strong local and weak district. Ah, that one kills us, because then the strong local just undermines the district. So there's a proposal they've been working on for 1.5 years, which has been saying, well, let's have single tiers. When you have a good local, not district, get rid of the district over that jurisdiction. So that in any area, you don't have two layers, but we have one. COOPTA did that work, but did not conclude it, and I said they're going to come back. So now this emphasis of the president of district model is what's really going to bring us all back to our senses around making the district the unit of planning, service delivery and implementation. And that's what we're all focused on. we are doing already a design evaluation for them on how this design, the model, and whether it's going to work. We also enter aid in certain cases so we don't have mistakes, like in this particular case. Issues of raising of rising debts and others, I would just suggest maybe we can come back, Chair, and just deal with the big indicator. The growth issues, unemployment, inequality, etc., debt, and we can have that discussion. I'm just hesitant to deal with it specifically outside of the overall monetary policy fiscal framework issues. That's not something we can deal with in isolation.
That's fine, although I think it's more on the side of national treasury.
Yes, it is. And also
If you want to make a comment on that, but
we agree, Chair, but we just, what I'm indicating is that in our screen, it forms part of the overall performance indicators that we see, GDP, performance, unemployment, Gini coefficient, poverty, because part of our contribution, the NDP, is to look at poverty, inequality, and unemployment. Then we look at what impact on it and what. But that's a pretty big discussion we can have one day on the NDP, very specifically, and look at what's happening there. Chair, again, let me ask that this matter of planning, monitoring, evaluation, we also do intervention. We're the biggest intervention department in government. When there is a problem, we are called to intervene. My colleague and I were the intervention on FASA. The stabilization of FASA was being led from BCME last week. From the time that SCOPA declared a problem in FASA, we were brought in to come and stabilize FASA to the point at which we exited after the Constitutional Court things were met, etc. We also lead the intervention on the Northwest, the Section 100 intervention. But importantly, we also, the Minister also chairs several IMCs, and IMCs are intervention mechanisms for cabinet when there is something wrong. Distress, mining town, IMC set up. Immigration, big problem, we're not dealing with it. IMC, and the minister would find himself chairing a lot of these, and we provide the technical support to that in order to intervene in areas on behalf of cabinet and the president and make sure we can solve problems.
Did you?
Job summit.
One area you have to come back on in terms of the performance of SASA now?
Yes, no, now. Looks like we're intervening again. we can tell you, Chair. They're already talking to us. talk to our lawyer now. So they're talking to their lawyer now. So, but we'll help them. Again, part of the challenge is when we move in and take over, sometimes it's helpful to help them at the back so that they can sustain the solution. They'll remind you, they are legal members. 275,000 jobs per annum comes very specifically from the Job Summit commitment. And the recently the President made a commitment. He sits now in weekly meetings, I understand it's a Monday, with the Job Summit team. And that's the first line of intervention of making this happen. But backing that, once in this committee, they have decided on how they're going to who will be called in to monitor. Mm-hmm. Where are those tied as sector elements? It's very easy to monitor government, but we also have a philosophy recently that government really doesn't create jobs. The jobs are created out there, and until we have that industry in our hands and control what they do and sign performance agreements with them as well, we will have these things done. So whether it's bank loaning money or job creation, that's really not a government function. But we'll get to it. At least at this point, the President is trying to ensure that all the Job Summit commitments are being done, and we will back that up with support when the programs. The programs are here to define their real commitments. Some of them are rolling out. We also have an initiative called PPGI, Public-Private Growth Initiative, that also contributes to that, and out of that, we will all be monitoring. Then that PPGI is now sitting with the Department of EPP. Again, we incubated it, made sure it succeeds, get commitment from the private sector. They are now part of our MTSF, a private sector contribution to the MTSF. But as it rolls out, it's now put in the EPP department so that it's run in those particular manufacturing sectors, etc. 34 sectors, including agriculture, automotive industry, etc. on another day at NCHEF, you can just come and talk to you about just that and what we've managed to do around the private sector participation in industrialization and industrial strategy. But DCI will then also follow up. We can just talk to you at a higher level. The next one deals with housing, human settlement, rural strategy. Honourable Member, the reality is that our overall rural strategy on many areas, not just human settlement, is relatively weak. And in a sense, all of the sectors require care intervention so that we design packages and specific programs for rural areas. What we've done around rural settlement, and I have a little bit of history around this, at some point in our history, in the 25 years, we were told that people in rural areas don't want RDP housing. They want to be assisted, they want to buy materials, they want to build their own houses because they know how to build. But more importantly, they don't want contractors coming in there and robbing them and giving them a small point of each. Because if you let rural people build for themselves, they actually will give you more for that money. That's what was attempted to resolve, but in a way we lost the focus while redesigning it. But some provinces have done well. I know Mpumalanga, some places in Limpopo have done well in rural housing because they've allowed a mixture of that model of people doing it themselves and government facilitating. So we do need a focus program, but also the issue about land and access generally is an area, particularly the PTOs from traditional authorities and all of that. We have a case we're dealing with in Limpopo, nightmare. Some of the issues around how people are treated in that traditional land system is just unbelievable. However, the integration between that and what we do as co-founders, chair and argue, is now only beginning to be seen as the Department of Traditional Affairs is now engaging itself beyond the matters of Amakos to the matters of rural development. So at least we're seeing that progress. We worked with them on this Limpopo case that I referred to. So they are no longer, up until now, the new department has been dealing with the Amakos issue, leadership matters, whether the institution is working. Now we're seeing them impacting on rural development, and that's quite a pleasant development and it's welcome. So we will keep pushing this issue that there are many programs, rural transport, rural sanitation, rural, etc. We must just really, all of us, put pressure and make sure our people in rural areas continue to benefit as much as urban people. Because in fact, the urban-rural migration is informed by absence of facilities. We believe South Africans don't want to be in urban areas. They are pushed by abject poverty and lack of access to decent services. So we can curb that time if we really just provide decent services. Title deeds, transfers, we indicate and said we'll come back to you. We think we can share that issue. It's administrative, it's not a problem. We've committed the provinces that have high backlog, and we can ensure, but also, I think the Honourable Member raised the issue about multiple ownership, which largely has a result of corruption again, and we need to solve them and do the major investigation. Family title is something that we've been dealing with since 1994. In fact, before RDP housing started, the easier thing to do was to sort out transfer, we used to call it transfer of housing programs, i.e. give people in townships their titles. And at that point, Honourable Member, I don't know what happened. We designed what we call a family title, recognizing our situation. Typically, there are many things that challenge that. When a parent dies in a township house, there are five people who are supposed to benefit, and a family title allows you to accommodate all of them without the typical Khalifa syndrome. You know the Khalifa syndrome? The Khalifa syndrome suggests the eldest boy is the only person who takes that house, and others get evicted. They still do, but family title was supposed to overcome Khalifa syndrome. We still have those problems. Most of us are victims of Sudanese pandemic.
Yeah.
Most of us are victims of Sudanese pandemic. As long as we are female, we lose out on.
Sorry, Chair, to do this, and I know we're running out of time. I'm concerned. I'm hearing in terms of the housing issues and how people don't want in the rural RGB houses. But this department must tell us today, the president initiated, which, and I personally have been for 5 years calling, that our people don't give them any more houses, we can't build houses, let's give them server sites, let's create and give them loan at 2% interest rate, right? I want to know what is the latest with that, because that was spoken a while ago, the German Social Development Bank, the president, I want to know about that.
Chair, fortunately you asked that question as well, and I wanted to do it at the end, just as a closure, because it was towards the end that that question was asked. We agree, Honourable Member, on the issue of performance against targets versus reality on the ground. And that relates to how we set targets for ourselves. And we say we're going to achieve electricity to so many households. That doesn't mean the whole of South Africa. It means that's our target. So when we meet it and exceed it, yes, we think it's good news, but we've not solved the South African problem. And we agree with you. One of the important things when we're formulating the priority was a consideration of what we do in this area. And the definition is well crafted. It says on priority, on services, your priority. Yeah, the social priority. It now reads the following. Consolidation of social services. Now that consolidation is this, the way we define it, is to say the following. Go and see where the gaps are. We've done well, generally. But go and see what's left out. Who the infill, where you've been inefficient, where you've had leakages, where you've not spent efficiently, where you've not given us value for money, and consolidate. So we are able to say those who are left out, there are very many categories on social grants, there are children under one. That's consolidation. Doesn't mean we're expanding social grants, it means we're focusing on the pockets that we left out. So will it be in this electricity situation? Who is left behind? Why are they left behind? Is it because they are sitting in areas that are difficult to get to, etc., but close those gaps? That's the priority for our administration, to close the gaps. And then we'll deal with this one also in that way. The more I say about Jaske River, there are two things that scare us. One is the issue around Jaske, Jaske, the valley, all these rivers that are intolerable. But the other that scare us is in this category, I'll put them together. These things that just keep recurring and we don't have solutions. The other is the banning of informal settlement. We can show you pictures. Every year, we know this, there will be an informal settlement that's banning in Cape Town. We know. The question is, how can we have that happening year in, year out? We must also plan for it. Just a flooding every year without a sustainable solution is an area of concern. This is where we come in. That's why we have to design interventions to say the reason we're lifting this thing is because it's just recurring. How can you have something that recurs for 10 years and without a solution? Provinces try, but you can see that whatever solutions they do are not sustainable. And this is an area we want to look at in the SIPS administration. Informal economy and the decline of the formal economy, I think those issues would like to basically indicate what engaging with Department of Labor as well around informal economy, informal trade, and a whole lot of issues. But maybe we can come back very specifically and respond to and paint a picture for you. Because part of what we've been arguing around the issues of employment, and we've engaged the South Africa around this. And when you deal with the data of how many people are employed, they have indicators and they survey partly how much employment is created in the informal economy. But we really get a sense that we're not too accurate on our assessment of the size and the scale of the informal economy. and how it operates and all of these things. We can come back to that on that one specifically, or link it to the other economic issues that we're going to bring.
Yes, it's fine, DG. You know, a department like yours, you may find yourself having to carry all the sins.
Yes.
Because there are departments which are responsible for the 8%. I think EDD, DGI, small business, they'll be most relevant.
Yes.
I think as far as you are concerned, I think there's an area that's how it's performing and so on.
Yes.
But the solutions, maybe solutions, they may not be in this department, they may be in respective departments.
Yes.
So we should just be careful. But as I'm saying, that I said to Oranga, they should ask you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And as you answer, I'll be able to take some and take them to the respective departments.
No, thank you very much. What I was going to say in the end is the issues related to the various responsibilities for who must attend to the informal economy. The real problem we've found is our definition of local economic development has been, and it's like planning, we've devolved it too far to local government. And the sign that we have is that local governments are not coping of dealing with a single approach to LED. LED is most important of dealing with this sector, but we don't have a coherent plan. It's localized. It's not even informed by national strategy. So those have been our questions around it to show you that the weakness is that you devolve too much and you rely on local government. I think the issue of life expectancy versus grants has been discussed and disability. Type of things we've covered, but also the type of things issue, the particular role for Surveyor General and other institutions that are responsible for keeping this information and data. Chairperson, we have spread ourselves in, we agree. Two things, too many priorities everywhere. We've tried to do everything to everyone. So by definition, in the previous 5 years, we had 14 priorities. We've come out now with 7. So we have the number of priorities deliberated so that we can be really focused. And we're saying, what are we doing in these areas that actually the second is we ourselves developed 1,051 indicators in the previous 5 years. So we used to measure 1,051 things. We've reduced that number now in the next 5 years. So when we come to the MTSF, we'll show you we don't have 1,000 more indicators anymore. Because it's this thing of trying to be God to everyone. You can't. But what we've also done is we've ensured integration between ourselves, local government, provinces and local government. So what the president was able to do is to say, here's the MTSF, call all the premiers and say, what are you doing in relation to this? So now we're speaking to the same indicators, all of us. Because before, multiply that 1,000, provinces would have their service endless. So yes, the focused approach is working. We're now focused on the fewer things. Better, fewer, but better approach. NSG, we have tried to do things that help the situation, but we're not winning. We made a proposal to TPSA to at least start at this level. We all have training budgets. But we as CME, for instance, go out and we have...
You said NSG, just call it in full.
Or National School of Government. Okay. The challenge is that we as government are unable to support it. So we made a proposal and said, look, we use our budgets to all sorts of service providers out there for training purposes. The challenge is that we're not able to get standardized results. So our CME has a high level of learning out. I can bring you all the PhDs and sit down with them here. People in TPME are basically researchers, they read a lot, they learn a lot. Two or three people at a time study to do their PhD. Because of that high learning curve, there was a lot of people who go for training. So the younger ones are going for training because they are seeing up there, lots of learning. Challenges, we then go to private service providers. We don't go to NSG. Because NSG one does not provide the type of training that we need. But we said to them, one, why don't you take all training departments of government, improve your capabilities as NSC, so that all of us rely on you? Because right now, I sign off training at such and such college, and I don't even know what we're getting back. But if we were to use central government training programs.
I was just laughing because we plan and then we shoot ourselves in the foot. The person who was working on this thing at one stage was now taken to be the premier in Northwest.
Okay, so we have solid talent, but we need your help.
Yes.
Overall, if I may just take this training issue, we have done the MTSS, a little bit of relief would indicate. When we're doing the MTSS, we needed a skills master plan to match it. We've given that task to the Department of Higher Education, Department of Labor. They are delivering it on the 1st of April, the government-wide skills master plan. The only reason they were not able to deliver it with us is because they said to us, oh, I'll finish your program with MTSS, then we'll tell you what training was. We can't do it in parallel. So we've given them up to April. But it constitutes an important part of the MTSS in its own right, except that they just deliver it slightly later. I can confirm the Department of Health is currently doing their field master plan. And if you know them, Chair, they're very jealous regarding their professional training issues. So they're doing it themselves. They will give it to labor and it will constitute part of it. So we have a plan. Only you see that plan in April around skills overall. CETAs, we agree, we just think CETAs must be targeted at providing care training programs and preferably through established institutions. What is the weakness of CETAs? Private sector, private individual service providers can't certify them, can't guarantee. So Joe Smith or Joe Mazibugo is a service provider. He sits there and trains 100 people and takes money. What product do you have? How do you guarantee whether those people have been trained or not? So we agree, Chair, forcing the SOCs also to take training quota would be part of the skill master plan. And well, there's some discussion with Transnet as well, the strong one, that need to come back. Sir, Jefferson, hey, we don't know. I don't know. We really all require assistance on this one. They brought a presentation to DG Plus, which they're complete. And we all have been supporting it. And then it just turned around. We're not sure. We really are not sure. But this area needs to unlock a big sector of facilitating the economy. And we just think STEAR is very important. Can we solve the problem of housing? And that comes back to the previous question as well. You know, we have been tempted to make this recommendation that in fact, and I'm the wrong person, maybe we shouldn't have done it within this process, if I'm allowed to reflect, if I'm allowed to reflect, if I'm honest, the way we made RDP housing central to the redevelopment program, I think was problematic. And I say so after being the head of housing for 10 years. And it's true, but it's true, because part of what we expected in the model was partnership, and that partnership never materialized. The model of housing was meant to say, government will put in a subsidy, and the private sector will do the rest. You all know, honorable members, there was no the rest. It never happened. And so then our program fell flat, and we never achieved our objective. So because of that, and realizing how risk-averse the private sector financial services are, we should have known that we can't rely on them to really provide 75% of that funding. I think we work on the ratio of pump priming 1:3. It never happened. They are not interested. In fact, they went to the opposite and redlined areas. Now, redlining should be made unconstitutional. When you redline an area, and what you actually mean is nobody must invest there. But more importantly, you kill all potential in those areas.
and the consequences are dire in society. All affluent people move out of red line areas because nobody is not going to buy a property, and what do you leave behind? I use my example, my own family house with the children who are left in the township, because all of us affluent move out to the suburbs, have only the drug dealers as their mentors. We pop in weekend and see them, but we're not their mentors. And therefore it then affects the whole social life and social fabric, because we can't live where we desire. We have to live where our properties accrue value. I can't live in a place where my property is not going to accrue value if you are a professional, etc. So those cycles are very serious. But I would say on housing, the inability to get the private sector to do their part needs us to review our strategy and move in the direction of giving people land, making sure they can build their own houses, regulating how that happens, because it's also quite important, and getting value for money. In Gauteng, let me be honest, they've already done that. When we deliver to you the MTSF or the 25-year review, the figures of the 3.1 million of houses delivered relates to housing. The rest, which is a million odd, is already land. So the ratio is now 1 to 3 already of where provinces are just giving land and not building houses. Because people are, that's what people want. They want land and they can do what they want with it. So we there is a general review of this area, making it more efficient. However, we recognize there are few groups that are vulnerable, extremely, who can't even build their own house, like the honorable member was saying, for the 90-year-old in the there we must still go in and build houses. But for the rest, able-bodied people, they must find intelligence that assists themselves. Peter Latrine's chair were looking at it, it's probably will come back to you on the MTSF. It is the, it's one of the things, low-hanging fruits which will just get rid of in the fifth administration. 30 days and the role of national DG. Chair, what we did in 30 days is we took the figures and said, look, let us analyze it. So that's why we ran after Gauteng and now Eastern Cape. It's the figures of 30-day non-payment that tell us that more than 80% of the contribution comes from Gauteng and Eastern Cape. That's why we zoomed in and focused on that. Because the rest can be dealt with through discipline. We were asked once by the president to write to DGs and give them threatening letters. We soon discovered that this thing lies in PFSA, and therefore DG Dondo should write the letters, not us, to actually issue warnings to DGs who really constitute 20% less spectrum of the causes of non-payment on daily days. So we've split the data. Again, this is a popular presentation. We've just laid one to two committees. We can come into the presentation on the detail of that for you. But what it shows is that the principal driver of non-payment of 30 days are the health departments that are hamstrung by medical legal claim. Their money runs out by November of the year. They then don't pay small businesses because the big businesses take them to court and get their money back. Small businesses can't take people to court, and therefore they become the fall guy. What they do is they wait until April, when April comes, and they pay them. But again, by November of that year, they've run out of money. So it's a vicious cycle. However, having dealt with this, with how they've introduced systems, we've cleaned up the corruption, the state advisor, we've cleaned up. One of the big contributors is the state of medical records. The reason they are losing cases is because when you go to the records area of a hospital, you find those records in water, you find those records in tatters, they are manually kept. So we've encouraged, and through Treasury, the allocation of money for health department and particularly health hospitals to get systems, electronic systems for records. How does records impact on 30 days? Simply, when a lawyer claims that their child was made disabled by you, Baragwanath Hospital, and you go to the archive and the file is wet and tattered and you can't show, the lawyer wins in court, hands down. The major contribution for losing cases is absence of proper record keeping. So So we prioritize record keeping in the health facility so that at least when they have that, then they can argue medical practice issues and ethics and other things other than that. So, Chairperson, just on that issue, the 30 days problem is well within our sight. It's managed by, it's so important to government that it's managed by what is called PCC, the Presidential Coordinating Council, which is the President and the Premier, who meets regularly, and this item remains on the agenda permanently. And we have to report them and say, this is how far we've come, this is the problem solved, etc. So we're dealing with it, but we're happy as well, because other committees have asked for it recently to come and do a presentation just on that. But consequence management for the rest, which are not medical legally linked, is very important, because they have no reason not to pay. It's not like they don't have budget, and those particular instances we can deal with. Chair, on the legislation and the laws we propose, I've already indicated the issue of the integrated planning framework is very important, all-encompassing, will make sure that we're able to plan properly and plan together with care, rules and responsibilities. The second, Chair, is just our experience on the Northwest, and that's my final input. We've been in the Northwest for 12 months now. We've made an intervention. We're seeing very good outcomes that are emerging on financial performance indicators. We have 43 cases of investigation. We report to Cabinet regularly. We also have a special ad hoc committee in Parliament that oversees our work, the ad hoc committee on the Section 100, which is an NCOP. So we report there as well. The indications there was we're making progress. What we see is that before we appointed administrators, there was a spike in irregular payments. But as soon as we appointed the administrators, that number came down. We've just received our first audit report. When you look at it, it doesn't look too good. It looks stable. But when you analyze the first half when we're not there, the second half when we're there, it's very clear. We've also done citizen surveys to indicate there's generally stability in the Northwest, and people are able to show you figures about the protests that have gone down. So things are improving. There is still a problem, though, with local government. But we have interventions there as well. The Minister of COPTA has just done a whole lot of changes there. She has put certain municipalities under administration, under Section 139 and all of that, and a lot of them are the situation will improve. So, Chair, what challenge there is, and let me just come to this issue of intervention. So we operate in that area, Northwest, on behalf of the President. We do a Section 100 intervention in terms of the Constitution. We move into a province and take over as Minister. We have a team of people that lives, works on our behalf in the Northwest. But Section 100 of the Constitution is very clear, relates to provinces. What are the other provisions? Section 139 of the Constitution relates to the similar arrangement of administration of government for local government. It's imposed by an MEC of a province when a local government is not performing. Then there's Section 154 of the Constitution that talks to not administration but assistance package. So you will move in and help before you need a 139. You must do a 154. A 154 is self-capacity, make sure you can assist, help them before you get to a 139. I can tell you now that in Northwest we've just designated 12 of those municipalities under 139. That means they are totally under administration, with the exception of one or two, basically. But that helps, because then we have new people appointed. In this latest version, it's a place where you have two mayors, two MMs in one municipality. So, and KZN as well. Northwest has just come with that. So, Chair, here's our challenge. Once we have a mechanism for dealing with provinces and municipalities, and these things of administration do help if you are firm about what you do in the time that you are in there. The challenge is that more recently, in the last two or three years, we've had examples of national departments that are equally delinquent. Department of Military Veterans, Department of Water and Sanitation. Chair, I'm not telling you what you don't already know. SCOPA has been built all of these. In the Department of Military Veterans, we've been asked to do an intervention, so we're calling it a soft 100 national. It doesn't exist. We just do it because we've been asked. So, we're just assisting. But we're doing exactly what we do in a Section 100. We've got a team that's in there, we've got our program for people. Dedicated, they are helping, they are setting up government systems, they are helping dealing with the corruption and other matters, etc., etc. So we assist like that. We were going to be asked to deal with water and sanitation until we had a new administration and a new minister. But that's the stage water, in fact, Treasury and ourselves had agreed that we must ask the president for administration of water and sanitation towards the end of the term, but fortunately the appointment and combination between the settlement gave everybody hope that they say new brooms will clean and we'll see whether it works. But the challenge is this, we don't have a legal mechanism for dealing with that. In our constitution was an assumption that national departments will never have, they'll never be wrong, but we've been proved otherwise. So it might be actually that we need a national version of the Section 100, just so that we feel the package. Something we call constitutional underdevelopment. And we would think you as lawmakers, just generally, it would be nice maybe one day we can come and have a discussion. We have made sure that that's a finding in the 25-year review. What we say in the 25-year review, we had a good constitution, we did amendments, but there are areas in the constitution that we didn't develop. And we call it constitutional underdevelopment. That means we're supposed to do legislation in a particular area and we didn't do it. That might be a useful thing to come and think about as well. We've discussed with the Department of Justice, we've said to them, look at these areas, we're short here, can we need your assistance? That chair would be the last issue we put on the table. But this one is a big one. Oh, finally, there's another controversial one, but it's not been canvassed properly. So we're also suggesting we need to think about the role of the state. What is the state? Can I put a full stop?
Yeah. No. Thank you so much, Tichy and your team. What is very clear, there are so many issues. So you can see now why we're longing to see the Director General of the Department. So many things have been lifted and we'll reflect on them and from our side try to prioritize, being aware of the fact that you are also wanted by other portfolio committees and committees of Parliament. But thank you very much. Our apologies, Honourable Members, know that we've eaten into your lunch, but it's there that we get people from President coming to present to us, so we to just give a little more time. But thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Outside the meeting, let me formally apologize for the discussion that we had. Look, the reason, let me say, Honorable Speaker was shocked. I was telling him about what happened over the weekend. One of my colleagues, and she is a reverend minister, was raped on a Sunday afternoon in the church premises at her own mission. So now I spoke with her yesterday, she was becoming calm, but today she's becoming. Yes, and she's the second of the